From the Korea Economic Institute in Washington, D.C., you're listening to Korean Context, news and analysis from the Korean Peninsula. Hello, and welcome to Korean Context. I'm your host, Jenna Gibson, Director of Communications here at KEI. As many of our listeners already know, KEI recently celebrated Korean American Day. This year, the theme was food, and we chose to honor three Korean Americans who have excelled in the field of culinary arts. On January 13th, we brought all three of them to DC for a luncheon reception to honor them, and we also brought in today's guest, Marja Bongarishtin. Marja served as the moderator on this panel as we talked about Korean food in the United States, being a chef of Korean descent, and much more. So today we are very happy to have Marja here on the podcast to talk about growing up as an adoptee, meeting her birth mother for the first time, and connecting with her over food, and much more. So Marja, thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Let's start from the beginning. Where did your love of food come from?
I've always had a love of food. I've got to kind of backtrack and then jump around with the story a little bit. I was born in Korea. And my mother was 19 and unwed, and my biological father was an army serviceman. So anyway, my mother did her best to raise me as best she could up until the age of three. So I was adopted by my parents at the age of three and grew up in Virginia. So my adopted father was always an avid cook. He was a colonel in the Marine Corps, which didn't give him much time to cook on a regular basis, but holidays and weekends, he'd always cook, and he'd always use recipes from this recipe box. So I would always get in there and try different things on the weekends. So basically, I've been cooking since I was 12, but I found my birth mother when I was about 19, and the first thing she did the first day that she met me was to take me to her house, and she cooked all my favorite foods I had eaten as a baby, and from the first bite, I had a flood of memories come back, my taste buds. So it became my obsession and a gateway into learning this culture that was a part of me but so foreign at the same time. So I started cooking with her, and I learned the language as well, just through, you know, recipes. So
what were some of those early dishes, the things that she made for you when you...
She made bulgogi, which is thinly sliced beef it's very popular in Korean barbecue. She also made japchae, which is sweet potato noodles with vegetable and beef. And she'd given me chonga kimchi, which is, it's actually called bachelor kimchi in Korean. That's like the translation. And they call it that because of the top of this radish. It's got a long kind of a leafy stem. And they say that that was the hairstyle of bachelors back in the day. So whatever. It doesn't look like a bachelor. But anyway, those are the three dishes that I remember the most from that day that just kind of whacked me with memories.
Since that time, how has your Korean background and reconnecting with your birth mother influenced your cooking style?
It is the end-all and be-all of my Korean style, I think. Although now my Korean mother says that I surpass her in terms of cooking. She's asking me for what to do with recipes, so that's great. But in terms of my cooking style, it's the way I like to eat. It's the way my family likes to eat. My husband and my daughter like to eat, and also my family in Korea. And funnily enough, all my aunts in Korea all had restaurants. So it's kind of funny that it comes full circle.
So it's in your blood.
I think so.
Yeah. How about Kimchi Chronicles? How did that come about, and how did you get involved?
So the director who directed Kimchi Chronicles was having lunch at my husband's restaurant, and I happened to be there with some friends. He's been in the food industry for a long time, directing lots of things. He did Spain on the Road Again with Mario Batali and Gwyneth Paltrow. So he was in the restaurant having lunch with a Korean producer friend of his, and my husband came over. He's known him for 20 years, and he's like, "Hey, what are you doing here?" He said, "Oh, I'm, you know, we're trying to get this money to do a show on Korea. So we're meeting with one of these Korean network executive guys. And he was like, really? He was like, my wife's half Korean. He was like, get out of here. So he brings me over. You know, they ask the obligatory questions, you know, did you grow up speaking Korean? You know, where'd you grow up? Blah, blah, blah. And I just gave him a short synopsis of my life story. And they called me the next day and asked me if I wanted to host. And originally, the show was supposed to be about a Korean chef going back to Korea and kind of discovering the sights and sounds and tastes of Korea. But then with my family and personal story added into it, it just kind of changed the whole dynamic of the show. And I was lucky enough to be a co-executive producer on the series as well, and got a lot of content in there about my family and all of that. So it was really a labor of love.
That's great. How was the feedback after it aired?
Awesome. Awesome, awesome. Of course you get the know-it-alls, a few know-it-alls that are, you know, it narrates certain things, and in Korea people slurp their noodles, A, out of necessity because it's so hot, but B, it's just kind of, Koreans are very vocal when they eat. I mean, it's just a fact. So I get, you know, you shouldn't promote the Koreans slurp their noodles that way because they don't. That's considered bad manners. I mean, but you know, I mean, everybody's a critic. You can't take it personally. You just do whatever's closest to your heart. And that show is definitely a piece of me and a huge part of my journey and coming full circle.
So how about the book that followed on afterwards, The Kimchi Chronicles, Korean Cooking for an American Kitchen? How did that come about after?
Oh, that was awesome. Well, we had interest when we were taping the show and having doing a cookbook. So luckily, Rodale was my publishing company. They had faith in me, having never written a cookbook in my life. But they just thought the story and how everything kind of tied together was great. So they're really supportive in that. It was funny to actually have to measure out for all these recipes I'd been cooking for years. It really took some trial and error, you know, trying to get measurements and, you know, concentrating too much on, you know, how much I was putting in. Anyway, it happened, and I'm really proud of that book. I'd like to do a book kind of melding both of my heritages. So I was thinking of doing kimchi and cornbread next.
That sounds great. I think that would sell really well across the U.S. for sure.
Yeah.
So I'm curious, because Korean food is becoming more popular, mm-hmm. but it's not necessarily super well known. Mm-hmm. So how did you translate your cooking and your recipes, both in the TV show and in the book, mm-hmm. for an audience that maybe doesn't know much about Korea?
Well, you know, I didn't really Americanize my recipes. I mean, my recipes have full-on garlic, like a cup of garlic, and this one paste that I do. I feel like a lot of Korean restaurants tend to kind of Americanize and dumb down some of the flavors because they're afraid of offending somebody who doesn't like garlic. Well, don't eat Korean food because it's everywhere. You know, so in the book and in the show, I'm unapologetic about how intense the flavors are. But, you know, Korean cooking, Korean cuisine, it's to each person who tries it has their own palate. Some people, even Koreans, they like it. Some like it not spicy, some like it a little more spicy. You have to adjust to your taste, and I think that's in any kind of cuisine.
Do you have a favorite or maybe a severely underrated, in your opinion, Korean ingredient that you like to use?
Severely underrated. Gosh, that's a good question. Well, I have a particular fish that I happen to love that's a pain in the butt to eat, but it's got so much flavor, and it's one of my favorite dishes that I always have to have when I go to Korea, and it's called kalchi. It's a fish. It's a belt fish, and it you'll see it in Asian markets sometimes. It looks like a silver saber. It's a very long fish. It's delicious and full of flavor, and tastes great in soups because the bone is so thick, but it's got lots of little bones as well. So it's an underutilized fish, I think, outside of Korea. And even there are Koreans who don't like to really mess with that fish just because it's too bony. But it's so good.
So you have a daughter, right? Mm-hmm. How much does she cook with you? How much have you shared your cooking with her?
She has zero interest in cooking. You know, she'll watch me. She, you know, she's always doing stuff in the kitchen when I'm cooking. You know, but she really, she's a very picky eater. To have two parents that are both chefs, I mean, it's like, she likes lots of Korean soups and things like that. But with her father, you know, he's a world-renowned Michelin star chef, and she will only eat his chicken fingers, pizza, and pancakes. Go figure.
So here at KEI, our mission is to foster understanding and friendship between the United States and Korea. And Korean American Day for us has always been about honoring Korean Americans who have helped bridge the two cultures. So having you here as our moderator for Korean American Day, how do you see food as a bridge between these two cultures?
Gosh, well, I think that food is a gateway into any culture because it has a history, it tells a story, you get to... You know, especially with Korean food, I call it the soul food of Asia. And I'm being half African American, I'm well versed in African American soul food. And it's really quite similar in that they both utilize cheap cuts of meat, tougher vegetables that take time, that have to be cooked down, that has to be nutritious, you know, that has to have the maximum amount of nutrition bled from it, I guess. I don't have any better word than that. And when you are able to kind of put similarities together in terms of cuisines and dishes, I think it makes it more approachable and less intimidating, especially for Americans. But, you know, even without those comparisons, I think it's just about educating, continuing to talk about not only the food, but the culture and, you know, just having an open dialogue.
Right. Yeah. So what's next for you? Anything, any big projects coming up?
Well, I am coming out with my own Korean food line. It's called Marge's Original. We are set to distribute it in the U.S., Japan, and China to start. And I have five things that are coming out. I have kimchi, two different kinds of kimchi. I have a paste that's called Mother's Paste, Oma Paste. Every Korean household, every mother has a different paste that she whips up to put in everything. So I just kind of did the one-stop shop one. And a couple other sauces, which are going to be great. But really authentic Korean. Mm-hmm. Want it to be accessible to everyone. And it's all about educating, you know. It's great because I think the problem with a lot of Asian companies that try and sell over here is that they'll translate what it is, but no one knows where in the heck to use it. Fish sauce, but, you know, they don't know you can use it in a soup or... So, you know, it's my job to come in there and explain.
Right.
Yeah.
Great. Is there anything else that you want to say for our listeners?
If you haven't tried Korean food, you need to.
Great. That's a great way to end it. So, Marjo, thank you so much for joining us
here today. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for joining us today for this episode of Korean Context. Please remember to subscribe on iTunes or wherever else you get your podcasts, and we hope to see you again next week.